Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Like Gomez or the Grateful Dead, concert pianists have their legions of devoted fans. Marc-André Hamelin is no exception. Since launching his career in the mid-80s, he's become known for his monster-sized technique and a passion for rare and off-the-beaten-track repertoire. A recent recording is typical, called In a State of Jazz. It's a collection of 20th-century works inspired by jazz, and we're not talking about Gershwin, but rather George Antheil, Alexis Weissenberg, and Friedrich Gulda, whom you're hearing in the background. Marc-André Hamelin also plays the classics. He joins us here in our studio this afternoon and will play live for us in a moment. Marc-André, welcome back.
Thanks for having me here. I'm a big supporter of public radio, actually.
Are you a super fan?
Very much so.
Now, you know, do you have any fan experiences of your own? You know, people waiting backstage or by the backstage door, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't have any crazed fans. I mean, you have to realize, I mean, this is classical music is nothing like rock music in that respect, and in many other respects, certainly. Fans are usually very level-headed and just really, really, truly nice.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, you think back to the so-called golden age, Van Cliburn at the height of the Cold War, winning the major, you know, piano competition arguably in the world in Moscow, and then coming home to a hero's ticker tape parade down Broadway and stuff, and Vladimir Horowitz being mobbed, you know, anytime he left a TV studio, where you would occasionally find classical pianists back in those days. You know, it seems like there is the capability, at least, of people to be that passionate about classical music.
Oh, yes, but this was another era, I think, and there's much more of an abundance of performers. Of exceptional performers, I think, and maybe it wasn't so much the case then. So I think that's the difference.
Well, you know what's and we sort of left our conversation with David Wild talking about, you know, the digital age and how much that is sort of creating this symbiosis between the artists and their fans. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've experienced as well?
Well, it's so much easier to reach people. I hadn't thought of that. I'm sure that zines are not really produced anymore, are they?
Right.
Paper zines.
The fanzines, as they...
Exactly, yeah.
No, I'm sure they're not. As I said before, it's basically hit a button and everything goes out on your listserv. So you yourself, in addition to perhaps being a super fan of public radio, are clearly a fan of unjustly neglected composers, you know, music that's been overlooked or forgotten. Where does that come from?
From a very natural inborn curiosity. From the very beginning, I knew what the standard repertoire was. My father, who played it on records and on the piano all the time, helped me get familiar with it. So because I always wanted to find out something else, you know, as soon as I had a little pocket money, and I think even before that, you know, I wanted to hear something else. And the first thing that I turned to was newer music, so I was very heavily into Stockhausen, Boulez, and Cage, and Xenakis in my early teens, really.
Hmm.
So I was very adept at finding bargain records. And it was a pleasure to discover these things.
So you were discovering, you know, the so-called high modernist school.
Exactly.
At the same time that presumably you were still playing Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms.
Oh, yes. I was schooled on this, and I've never forsaken these things, and I still play them.
Now, in the album In a State of Jazz, there are a number of surprises. I mean, Alexis Weissenberg had a reputation as this kind of steely-fingered Bulgarian pianist. And it was as a pianist that he made his reputation. You've discovered some works that he arranged that are based on, like, French pop song. Tell us about this.
Well, a friend actually alerted me to this little recording that he had made under a pseudonym in the 50s. It was a little 45 RPM called Mr. Nobody Plays Traîner, Charles Trenet, the French singer-songwriter. And there were these six wonderfully creative and very florid and virtuosic arrangements of Trenet songs. And I thought, this is really too marvelous to not to do anything with. And I found out that they had never been written down, so I set out to write them down myself. I used my own ears, of course, but also an interesting piece of software which allowed me to slow down the music without altering the pitch. And that's how I was able to do this.
Wow. Okay. So you and the old 45 RPM technology and the new computer software technology making it possible to recreate this music from the 50s.
Yeah, there you go.
By Mr. Nobody,
yes.
A.K.A. the distinguished pianist Alexis Weisenberg. You want to play one of them for us?
Certainly.
All right. This is called En Avril à Paris, in April in Paris. It is an arrangement of a song by the French singer and songwriter Charles Trenet by Alexis Weisenberg in a live performance here in our soundcheck studio by Marc-André Hamelin. That's Marc-André Hamelin at our piano here in our soundcheck studio. En Avril à Paris, April in Paris, a song by Charles Trenet, which in the 1950s, the classical pianist Alexis Weisenberg arranged and released under the name Mr. Nobody?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And how did you know it was Alexis Weisenberg?
Well, it came to light because he has a website and he actually lists that recording. But I think for many decades, it was still a mystery.
Okay.
And he also issued two other recordings, at least under the name Mr. Mystery. And one of them is entirely devoted to songs from My Fair Lady.
All right. So you've written down, you've notated these pieces that he never bothered notating, apparently.
That's right, yeah.
And so now?
He didn't consider them very important, actually. He tossed them off after I think it was a Liszt Sonata recording session. It was on a little label called Lumen Records.
So he tossed them off, and you, half a century later, decide, no, this is good stuff and is worth keeping and making available to other pianists.
Oh, I thought they would definitely strike a chord.
Mm-hmm. With audiences,
yeah, audiences and pianists alike.
All right, so some of these Weisenberg arrangements, they're on this record In a State of Jazz?
Yes.
In the liner notes to that record, you write, there is no jazz in this recording. Jazz is a very different animal than classical music. So what's the meaning of the title, In a State of Jazz?
That is actually taken straight from the program notes that Weisenberg wrote for his own piano sonata, which is entitled Sonata in a State of Jazz. Jazz for him is very much a state of mind, of a sort of intoxication, of even contamination of the soul, you know, things like that. And his own...
I guess he means that in a good way, right?
Well, yes. I mean, it's all positive, of course. I would invite you to read these program notes. They're really quite... they're a little wordy, you know, but they're very, very evocative.
So the music on this album is all notated. It's not improvised.
That's right.
So is it your job as the performer to make this music swing? To make it sound jazzy? Is that
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
Well, it's not always easy because the traditional classical notation as we know it cannot hope to reproduce the very subtle element that is essential to swing.
Even your fancy-schmancy computer software that helped you slow down Alexis's piece so that you could notate all the notes?
That's right. That's right.
Still not good enough to capture that.
Yeah, the best one can do is either to write dotted rhythms, you know, which only do part of the job, or like Friedrich Gulda did, one of the composers on this record, write even notes and write just play unevenly.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll just assume that you at least have heard some jazz or that you're clued into whatever the style represents.
Friedrich Gulda, an interesting guy, classical pianist who kind of turned his back for many years on the classical world because he loved the sound of jazz and improvisation. Yeah. And
he went to a jazz concert in 1950 and he was never the same.
Never the same afterwards.
Shocked the Viennese completely, but they got used to him.
So Gulda, Weisenberg, they're sort of an extension of this old tradition of the composer-pianist, going back to Beethoven and Liszt and Mozart and yes, I suppose...
And wonderful improvisers both, actually.
Mm-hmm. As was Bach. What about you? You're a composer as well?
Well, I'm a pianist who writes. I'm a pianist who has very much of a creative need to produce things. I mean, I wouldn't call myself... an active composer, but I certainly enjoy writing. I've always had the urge, I think, from the very beginning of my music lessons. I saw my father's music collection, those big-looking Liszt things, and I saw, on the other hand, the music paper that he had, so I decided to try to fill it and see what happened. But of course, I filled it initially with utter nonsense because I didn't know what I was writing, but the impulse was there.
Mm-hmm. So this little nocturne that you're going to play for us, did this begin as an improvisation?
No. No, this was a commission from a pedagogical periodical called, it's Clavier Magazine, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think, I wrote it a little while ago. I don't think it's been published yet, but I think it's imminent. And it's a very, very short piece. It almost sounds like a sketch for something longer, but I'll let it stand as it is, I think.
Okay. It's called Little Nocturne, and this is a work by Marc-André Hamelin, who is performing tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the Grace Rainey Rogers Auditorium of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. His CD, one of two recent CDs from him, is called In a State of Jazz, but this piece, not yet recorded or even published, his Little Nocturne, Marc-André Hamelin, live on Soundcheck. Thank you. Once again, Marc-André Hamelin live in our soundcheck studio in his own composition. That's The Little Nocturne, written at the request of Clavier Magazine. So is there a kind of a technical thing at work? Is it like an exercise for a certain kind of technical skill?
No, not at all, actually. I was given totally free rein.
It's a lovely little piece.
Thank you.
So I mentioned that the State of Jazz album is just one of a couple of recent albums that you've done. The other one is this album of Godofsky transcriptions of the music of Strauss.
Yes, that's something I'd wanted to do for a while. He wrote three sizable and rather mammoth paraphrases based on Strauss themes, and I've been wanting to do these for 25 years.
And is it just a matter of these pieces are so obscure that it's hard to find a record company that's willing to take the plunge and put out the recording?
Or? No, in this case, I think it's because they're very, very difficult. They're
okay.
Very contrapuntal. They're rather thickly textured and.
Well,
pianists really know to stay away from them, perhaps with reason.
Well, you've never shied away from a challenge. I mean, you've done a lot of really technically very difficult virtuosic stuff. Does that get in the way at a certain point in your career when, as you have, you reach the stage where you're playing with the New York Philharmonic and you're playing at the Met and, you know, the major orchestras around the world? Don't the presenters want their Tchaikovsky's and their Brahms concerti rather than this other stuff that you seem to love so much?
Well, certainly, but my recorded repertoire only gives, it gives a distorted picture of what I do. I mean, if you see my recital programs, they are very balanced.
Between the sort of the classics, the mainstream classics.
Oh, yes, and some of them are actually completely traditional. I've had a Haydn, Chopin, Debussy program for a little while. I put together a program for 09-10, which consists of Haydn, Mozart, Liszt, and the second half is a little bit more unusual. It's Fauré and Alcan. But you see, there's a balance there.
Okay. So it's not necessarily a case where you kind of paint yourself into a corner by doing unusual, overlooked pieces.
I might have done that for a little while, but I realized I should change my tune.
Maybe the Bach and Beethoven isn't such a bad career move after all, huh?
It's wonderful.
Okay. Marc-André Hamelin is playing tomorrow at the Grace Rainey Rogers Auditorium at the Metropolitan Museum of Art at 8 p.m. He's been with us on Soundcheck today. Marc-André, good to see you again.
Thank you so much.
And that'll do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, author and neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about the potential of music to treat children with autism. And Mark Oliver Everett, leader of the rock band The Eels, joins us to talk about his struggle to understand the father he barely knew and his influential theory of quantum mechanics. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Have your PhDs ready. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer with Alicia Abbott. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatow, and we had help today from Alex Tatusian. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again at this time tomorrow for the next Soundcheck here at 93.9 FM WNYC.